The Chad Olson Show. The Chad Olson Show.
This is the SOS Radio Network. SOS. From award-winning journalist and author Chad Olson comes the all-new book, Tales from the Red Rooster Cafe. An old man building a ladder to the stars and hiding a deadly secret for his enemies. A social media mogul's last day on Earth and a dire warning for our future. A mysterious salesman offers a housewife a new chance at happiness. Will she leave it all behind for true love? Tales from the Red Rooster Cafe by Chad Olson. One critic writes, if Ray Bradbury and O. Henry had a literary love child, they might write like Chad Olson. Tales from the Red Rooster Cafe. 30 powerfully humanizing short stories in a page-turning portrait of the human heart. Available now at Barnes & Noble, barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com, and at select booksellers near you. Tales from the Red Rooster Cafe by Chad Olson. Your adventure awaits.
The Chad Olson Show. Chad Olson Show.
Last year, I was on 120 different radio interviews, and I've got to tell you that you're the best. And I mean that sincerely. I'm not flattering you. I want a promise from you that when you have your own national television show, that you don't forget AMAC and Dan Weber and you have us on.
The Chad Olson Show.
Chad Olson Show.
You're a patriot, but even you're an intelligent patriot who can communicate, and that's so important.
The Chad Olson Show.
The Chad Olson Show.
Find today's episode and previous editions of The Chad Olson Show in the podcast page at ChadOlsonShow.com. That's www.ChadOlsonShow.com. Log on now.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. It's not a partisan talking point or really any kind of exaggeration at all to say that Joe Biden has opened this country's borders to the world. Since Biden's inauguration in January, the Border Patrol has apprehended close to 1 million foreign nationals coming into this country overland through Mexico. How many people is that? Well, it's more people than live in the entire cities of San Francisco, or Denver, or Seattle, or Indianapolis, or Boston, or Charlotte. We could keep going. And that's all in just 6 months. That is enough people to change this country forever. Now, you may argue that's a good thing. America will benefit from this mass influx of new people from foreign countries. If so, we'd love to hear that argument in detail. No one so far has explained how that works. But what you can't argue is that opening the borders was legal or that anyone in this country voted for it. The current mass movement of foreign nationals into the United States was never approved by Congress. No one passed a law demanding it. The Biden administration just did it unilaterally without asking Americans what they thought of it. They
The Chad Olson Show.
Yeah, and if there is an encapsulation about what is being done to the United States population against our will and above and beyond the duly elected representative Republican adjudications that are supposed to be in place to make sure that we have a consensual relationship with our government rather than one of dictatorship and absolute mandate. It is that we confront now in this era every institution that is in place purportedly and ostensibly to ensure the security of our nation is now working, it would seem, in exactly the opposite direction. I'm trying to be delicate in the way that I frame that intentionally, and that's partially due to the fact that we have in studio with us during this edition of the show somebody whose resume is actually working for the Central Intelligence Agency. And if there's one figurehead agency, aside from the FBI and everything they're doing to try to criminalize patriots, we now know that in this Biden administration, whether it's the military that's actually giving escort rides to illegal immigrants, or it's the FBI that's now criminalizing patriots as domestic insurrectionists, white supremacist terrorists, or it's the intelligence agencies who've come out publicly and identified white nationalism and patriot white nationalism, as they're nonsensically terming it, as the greatest threat to our nation. What we see is a holistic undermining of the very foundations of these organizations that are supposed to supposed to run Mueller, one would think you were in the business of trying to keep America safe, and you and I had just started to get into the flesh and the meat of the conversation about the way that you've seen, the way that you had a front row seat to watching the degradation
right.
of the organization you worked for. To the best you're able, just describe that points, if you can.
I think my epiphany, you have all these little clues, but you don't really put them together until you have an epiphany. And my epiphany came when General Petraeus had been nominated and was going through the confirmation to be the head of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yes.
Not a job he wanted. But, and again, being the nondescript, semi-successful CIA officer that I was, I was in a room with a bunch of pachyderms, mandarins of the seventh floor, which is the top floor of the CIA headquarters. And they were discussing, they were concerned of what General Petraeus was bringing, because he was an outsider. And he was a marathon runner, and he had very original ideas, supposedly. And
there's some problem with cardiovascular fitness in Langley that we don't know about, or that was just an interesting
right. Walk around the hallways and you'll see.
you said pachyderms, you meant that literally.
Right? I did. But some of them are very smart people, but nevertheless, they have made their ethical choices as I would. To advance their careers.
Yes.
And I remember one of the junior mandarins expressing concern about, this guy's coming in, he's going to bring his own people, what are we going to do? And the senior most of them said, and this was where my epiphany occurred, was, well, we'll tell him what we want him to know, not what he needs to know. And the wallpaper and I melded very quickly, because the last thing I wanted to do was being told never repeat the story. And when I've repeated it in the past to tell people about where the agency was starting to go, they kind of look at you, and it's a hard thing to say. But the
common vernacular for that would be basically feed them BS and keep them in the dark.
Pretty much,
which is. It's so appropriate, given what we've just watched for 4 years with what they did to Donald Trump and his inner circle, in the compartmentalization and the use of the naturally occurring technocratic void and the chasm between the technocracy and the average citizenry, absolutely using that as a firewall and an insulation to the grander scheme and the agenda, to make sure that the agenda is never harmed, even though we elected an outsider to the presidency. To make sure that the agenda survived Donald Trump and that it continues forward at warp speed.
Oh, it accelerates exponentially every
yes.
day. And so, of course, then David Petraeus was, hoisted on his own petard by, his affair with his biographer and his misuse of or mishandling of classified information. It's like you shake your head going, you're a four-star. You know better.
Yes.
But nevertheless...
He walked into his own claymore.
Exactly, very much so. Front towards me.
Yes.
That was startling. And after that epiphany, the rose colored glasses sort of fell off, and I started to see. I wasn't looking for confirmation, but you started to see more of what was always been in front of you the whole time, but either. Through your own personal ambition, your head was down and you were focused on advancing your career and doing the best job you could.
And you touch on, and that's a brilliant point, just in the simplicity of understanding that even when people do have the very best of intentions and are, as you were, dedicated to the country and to preserving the Constitution, you still have the considerations about advancement of your own career, materially providing for your family, just the basic necessities of life. I'm interested in your opinion about whether it's even possible for people who want to do the right things and are in positions where they're able to have influence or at least be able to do something. Is it possible to survive in what seems to be just an extremely acidic atmosphere without you know, the consequences that we saw leveled at, you know, whether it's a David Petraeus or a Donald Trump, or is it possible to navigate that community and community is the wrong term. You struggle to even put nomenclature to
neighborhood.
It, yeah. Is it, can you navigate the landmines long enough to be an effective force for truth, good, the good and decency in the American way, you know?
I would hope so. Eventually you get frustrated. There are certain where they cull the herd, if you will.
Yes.
And in the Directorate of Operations, which the Special Activities Division was a part of, they have a leadership course, and which is basically where they sort of predetermine who's going to move up into the senior executive ranks.
And how, I'm interested. Oh, that's a juicy morsel right there, right? What criteria do they use to make the determination?
Well, there's a class proctor who's a senior executive service, what we call the senior intelligence service, member of this. This gentleman, who's like Lord Voldemort, I won't say his name on the air because, you know, all sorts of reasons. No, but he brought in a bunch of people, and I guess I was pretty clueless because I asked a lot of hard questions, like, why are we doing? Why they would talk about prior operations, and there would be a lot of chest thumping and you know trying to wave the flag in front of us. And I'm going, you know, that doesn't pass the smell test, and that, you know, that doesn't seem right. Why would you do it that way? And he got so frustrated with my questions, he basically told me to shut the up and
and
in front of the whole class of, I think, 30-40 people.
He pulled rank.
My peers, he would tell me, I don't like you and you're never going to advance in this agency. And I'm like, okay.
That blatantly.
Oh, yeah. And it's fine. I mean, and the thing was, because I had a couple people come up to me later and say, oh, man, you really screwed up. You better go kowtow to him and, you know, kiss his hiney. I'm going, no, because, you know, my job, which I started to look at, like, I was at the tail end of my career anyways. My job, my career, isn't going to tuck me in at night, isn't going to comfort me when I'm sick, and I want to be able to look at myself in the morning and at my children at holidays or whenever we're able to get together now that they're up, old and growed, and be able to have some vestige of integrity and ethics.
It's shocking to me the rarity of those kind of considerations in the world that we live in today. I resonate, although it was not as highly placed as yours. I was in the belly of the beast too, in terms of the mainstream media, and worked for over 20 years as a mainstream media evening news anchor, investigative reporter, and there's the same code of engagement and the same kinds of considerations that happen, and I understand completely the calculation that you are making. At end of the day, or in the morning, by dawn's early light, it's the guy that you're looking at when you're shaving.
Correct.
That you have to be okay with. And there's certain things that once you've compromised them, you never get them back. Nobody can ever duly recompense you for what it is that you've sacrificed. And you very clearly came to that same conclusion.
And it's an individual decision point for everyone.
Yes.
What
is it about me that's for sale? Is what things are for sale, and what things under no circumstance, and regardless of what the recompense might be, what the compensation might be, what is it that I will never allow anybody else to touch?
Right, but a lot of these people either consciously or even subconsciously make a decision, and before they know it, they're at the end of their career. And they have nowhere else to go but to become a contractor or a news commentator on MSNBC or,
yes,
or CNN or somewhere, and
yes,
badmouth everything that, and you wonder where these people came from, because like Phil Mudd and other people that comment.
You mentioned him, and so let's air his famous quote. He said, if they want to, the intelligence community in the United States has seven ways to Sunday to ruin you,
right.
to destroy you. He was talking, of course, about Donald Trump, and that was in the very early goings of the Trump administration. And as we know, Operation Crossfire Hurricane, the full complement of the weaponry, the full fusillade of every power that the American intelligentsia could bring to bear in destroying Donald Trump. That's exactly what they did. I argue all the way down to COVID-19 and the deployment of that as a weaponry set piece. There's a chance, and I alluded to it earlier in the way that propaganda and psychological warfare on a very high and very sophisticated intelligence level is now being deployed fully against the American people in violation of what we used to know as the 1948 Smith-Mundt Anti-Propaganda Act. The modernization of that under Barack Obama has let us in for everything that we're seeing now. And I'd like just your perspective on that and the way those operations are being used against this nation.
Well, if you cut out the whole domestic part, what you just discussed, and you just look at what the United States efforts were as part of the global war on terror overseas.
Yes.
Combined with the intelligence community efforts, State Department messaging, the special operations community, especially under Stan McChrystal, and you see those efforts, and we can talk about how successful or unsuccessful they were.
Destabilization.
Right, destabilization. If you look at all
disinformation.
If you look at all those tools that we employed in pursuing the GWAT overseas, and you realize that they're all being turned inward now upon us.
Yes.
And that is a scary, scary thing. I mean, we don't have predators flying overhead yet. We don't have little Beechcraft aircraft vectoring our cell phone or mimicking cell phone towers to vector in strike teams or anything like that. But
can there be any doubt that that's not long in the offing, given everything else? There would have been a time when we would say that they would never deploy the kind of paramilitary psychological warfare operations against the American people. We might have submitted that as gospel truth at one point, say 20 years ago, and we would have been wrong. And so now, is there any assurance that those kind of deployments are not in the future? I pose that as a rhetorical question as we're just about to another commercial break, and I want to come back on the other side of this and give you opportunity to elaborate about this. You're listening, ladies and gentlemen, to an operations officer in the Central Intelligence Agency. He's now retired, retired in 2013, but he's sharing his wealth of experience and just a very rare perspective on everything that we're seeing. He was actually inside these operations that we now see deployed against the American people, and is sharing that perspective with you as we speak. Interesting that he would bring up drones and that kind of thing. Good friend of the show, Sam Kempart, and I did a piece about 10 years ago talking about that kind of a deployment. We'll piece that in and meld it into the continuation of this conversation as we go. Chad Olson Show, SOS Radio Network.
The Chad Olson Show.
This is the SOS Radio Network. SOS.